Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the Book of Korean Folklore, written down by W.E. Griffiths. In this story, we meet two creatures that seem like they could be a good couple, or maybe not. Let's find out. Okay, let's begin. Sir One Long Body and Madam Thousand Feet. In the land of morning calm, where the family names usually only have one syllable, such as Kim, Yi, Pil, Bak, Choi, etc., they wear shoes, but not made of black leather. The people neither stand up on wooden clogs as in Japan, nor encase their feet in flat, straight-soled gaiters as in China. The gentlemen put on white socks with tough leather soles, and the ladies don dainty slippers with the pointed toes that turn up. Common folk sandals are chiefly made of straw and twine, and it takes a good deal of cordage to complete a pair. Now once there lived a fair young creature named Miss Thousand Feet, under an old stone that sat below the persimmon tree. She wore lead-colored clothes. She had so many toes that anyone who tried to count them soon got tired, so they just stopped and rounded to 1,000, which was a number as round as herself. She was so proud of her feet, and took time to paint each one. Miss Thousand Feet was very modest, however, and if anyone stepped on her toes or touched her, she would curl up into a ball so that men, by a pun on her family name, called her a pill bug, for she belonged to the pill family, one of the most famous in all Korea. Miss Thousand Feet was very happy living under a damp stone in the cool earth, and she loved to play. But by and by, when she grew up, her parents told her that it was time for her to get married, so they looked around to see if any of the gentlemen in all of creation were worthy of her. Not only to make a suitable husband, but also a good match. Now in another village lived a fat, rich, young, promising male creature named Mr. Longbody of the Jirong family. His business was to eat his way through the ground and pile up little curled heaps of mud on the surface, and this work kept him very busy. He had to look out for the birds because they enjoyed eating folks like him, for he was so soft and sweet. Constant exercise moving through the ground kept his body shining, so that as earthworms go, he was quite handsome and considered a good catch for Miss Thousand Feet. They were an odd but good match, as he had no feet and she had so many, and while his body was long, hers was quite short. So what one lacked, the other had in spades, and they would both be happy together as husband and wife. When Mr. Longbody heard of the charms of Miss Thousand Feet, he was of the same opinion. All of his friends were pairing off, the grooms bringing home their brides to their father's homes and setting up housekeeping. As he had come of age, he was determined to marry, so he sent letters and opened the courting, according to Korean etiquette, through a go-between, as the lady who arranges marriages is called. This person goes to see each of the families, promising to one the beauty and intelligence of the promised bride, and to the other, the kindness and wealth of the future husband. Indeed, she regales the parents with tales of the very good character. Finally, the 6 exchanges, or half-dozen rules, had been completed, and the engagement of Mr. Jirong and Miss Pil was announced. What a clatter of gossip was heard at once in both villages. No one ever thought that such a handsome fellow as Mr. Longbody Jirong would ever marry into the Pil family. Some jealous folks hinted that Mr. Longbody, if he found a wife with 1,000 feet, would never be able to pay his shoemaker. On the other hand, so long as his bride would be content with plain twine shoes, all might go well, but for extra occasions, or if his wife were extravagant and wanted footwear made only of red morocco, such as only the rich folks wear, well, there would be trouble in the household. How could he keep her in shoes? Other people, however, who knew that the Pils were famous, wondered how Mr. Jirong ever managed to get such a prize as Miss Pil. In the other village, the tongues of the gossips carried on in much the same way. What did she see in that fellow without legs? When the honeymoon was over, and it came to making gentlemen's clothes for her husband, did she have any skill with the needle? Could she make one long coat and one trouser leg big enough to fit him? And think of the many days of work necessary to cut and sew the garment, to say nothing of the weary hours to be spent in washing, starching, and giving a gloss to such clothes. The idea! Why, she would have no time to be anything but a slave. as her husband's seamstress, tailor, and laundress, she would get no rest. Think of the washing, starching, and beating to a fine gloss the one-legged trousers, which Mr. Jirong would have to change often, for he lived in the dirt. Now Mr. Longbody Jirong was so busy with the work of excavating the ground that he had no time to pay attention to the village chatterboxes. Miss Pill, however, couldn't help hearing what the gossips said about her, and especially the talk concerning the terribly hard duties that awaited her if she had took him as a husband. While Mr. Jirong kept digging at the tunnel, which he was excavating underground, so as to save up to be ready for his wedding, Miss Pill brooded over what the gossips talked about, and over those awfully long coats and one-legged trousers she would be obliged to sit up at night to make and wash and starch and gloss. She already imagined her arms tired in anticipation of the starching and beating on the Korean luster, without which no gentleman in the land of morning calm ever goes outdoors. If his coat didn't have that fashionable shine which a long beating gives, the women would notice it immediately, and pretty soon the men also. Miss Pill's brooding night and day over the matter did not help matters, and it finally wore upon her nerves. She refused to prepare her own dowry, and despite what all of the praise her friends told her about Mr. Longbody Jirong, she decided to write a letter to him. It told him that on the account of his long trunk without limbs, and the great labor necessary to make him proper clothing, and of the starching and glossing it to say nothing of the ironing, she felt unable to go ahead with the marriage engagement, and must break it off. But before she had dropped the water on the inkstone and began to rub up the ink, or take the brush and paper in hand, Mr. Longbody had gotten wind of her complaining, and it worried him. Why should he marry one who didn't want him? Then, as he thought it over, being a very thrifty and economical bachelor, he began to doubt whether he could buy enough shoes to fit all the feet of his betrothed. He had not looked at her face or talked with her yet. Indeed, it was hardly Korean etiquette that he should, openly at least. So far he had not seen her tiny feet to count them up. But he suspected that, since she belonged to the Pill family, she must have 1,000 feet according to her reputation. When he began to calculate what it would cost him, even in cheap twine sandals, he was startled. When he figured out what ladies' turned-up shoes would come to, he was so alarmed that he nearly fainted. At the sight of 500 pairs of shoes, however tiny, his breath almost failed him, and he saw himself ruined. What should he do? And when she took off her footwear at night, where should he stow it away? Then, what a racket she would make if she put on rough-soled shoes while doing her work around the house and yard. It was horrible for the quiet bachelor to even think of the clatter she would make. He already felt deafness coming on. Should he break off the engagement? Yet, how could any one of the Jirong family honorably do such a thing? What would the neighbors say? If he was prone to breaking his word, how would he get another bride of a family as respectable as that of the Pills? However, he would sleep over it, as there were a few days left before the wedding. But by the next morning, the matter had cleared up, and he was able to crawl into his hole and out of sight with comfort. He sent a letter to Miss Pill, setting forth the facts, and asking for a release from the engagement to marry. The substance of his letter was this, that owing to his small fortune, he would be unable to buy her all the shoes, and of the kind which a lady of her quality and tastes required. He therefore could not think of asking her to share his poverty, but begged her to secure another husband who could do so. Now it happened that the letters crossed on the road. Each had a refusal before the ink was dry, so neither could complain. So there was no wedding, nor any frolicking among the young folks or feasting of the relatives. And to this day, Miss Pill remains single, and Mr. Jirong has no wife. They were very severe on the two of them. All the gossips say that it served the 1,000-footed hussy right, and that the rake, Mr. Jirong, was no good either. Folks had better look at the good points in a person's character and not dwell upon his faults and defects. On the other hand, in Mr. Jirong's village, all declared with one voice that bachelors should count up all the expenses in getting married. Miss Pill still goes shoeless, hiding from the light under a stone. Mr. Jirong keeps out of sight underground, for he has nothing to wear. The end. I really enjoyed the personification of the animals in this story. I had to change a few things, mostly sentence structures, but also the common family names. It is kind of obvious that Griffiths didn't have a great grip on the language or culture despite writing down these stories. And if you speak some Korean, you will find my Easter egg in this episode. I'll have to find a new Korean folklore book soon, as this one is almost done, but I'm enjoying bringing it to you. And my podcast shout-out is to the amazing Bunny Trails. Dan and Shauna take a common turn of phrase, look at its origins, history, use, and pop culture references. And again, they are super sweet folks. You can hear them on my Friends of the Pod episode, or any number of episodes that they have done on their own. Go check them out. And if you like them as much as I do, go and give them a like, a rating, and a review. And the listener shout-out is to Kolkata, the largest city in the province of West Bengal in India. It is the 7th largest city in India, with a population of 4.5 million. The city also boasts that it is the 2nd largest Bengali-speaking city in the world. It was also an early de facto capital of India before they reached independence from the British. It looks like a lovely city, and I've wanted to go to that part of the world for the longest. And so to my listeners in Kolkata, I will say this in Bengali. Dhanyabada Ibam Subraratri. Thank you, and good night.